I do believe we have Elizabeth Moffley on the phone with us. Are you there, Elizabeth?
I am here, and how are you?
I'm good. I remember when you were running for superintendent of education, you came up here to Greenwood. It was good to sit down with you then.
It was. I really enjoyed your show, too.
Absolutely.
You do a great job.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. But you've decided, let's see, you didn't make a superintendent of education, but you did go back and run for the school board down there in Charleston, correct?
That is true.
And you've been fighting the battles down there, too, I understand.
Well, you know, we've got a lot to do yet in education, but I have been.
And what made you decide to try to go to Congress? I mean, you know.
Well, public service is something that it's part of me that I'm driven towards, that I want to serve my constituents. And, you know, I tried to serve the state as the state superintendent of education. I just have a larger calling to serve the 1st Congressional District.
Well, you certainly have a crowded field down there with 16 Republicans and 3 Democrats. That's huge, isn't it?
Yes, it's a little crowded, I'd say.
And you're
confusing the general population.
Well, that's why we were reaching out to some of the candidates. We wanted to talk to them. By the way, I was on your website today, and I just have to ask you one thing. Are you a Clemson fan?
You'd think it was Halloween on my website, wouldn't you?
Well, it's always a clue, so that's why I thought maybe you're a Clemson fan.
Well, actually, I didn't really choose the colors, and my husband actually chose them, and I don't really root for one or the other. My dad was a UVA graduate.
Right.
So it's actually, those are UVA colors.
Are they? Okay.
They are. If we were going to give them to somebody.
Okay. All right. Well, that sounds good. Well, I know one of the things that you feel that the constituents, the people, are not being heard in Washington.
That is true.
And you feel that you can make a difference on this?
I do. I think one person can make a difference, and it depends on the person.
Huh?
How?
Right.
Well, it's called collaboration, that, you know, those that are elected, that you work together to correct the things that are affecting those that we're elected to represent. And you know what those items are, and that you work together. I mean, that's the only way you're going to get anything done up there, is you have to communicate.
Well, what is the problem with Washington now? I mean, we have what do you think of the group from South Carolina that are up there right now?
Oh, I think we have a great group in South Carolina, but as you well know, we, as Congress, represent America as a whole, and it's, you know, we're over-regulated. And I feel that one of the things, unfortunately, that has happened, and it seems to happen with every government agency, is that there is no oversight of regulation. And we have a lot of agencies or departments that we really shouldn't even have. You know, I originally got involved in politics because of the federal government. I don't know if you were aware of that, but it's what sparked my interest.
Now, wasn't
not
it
necessarily
about some regulation at a PTA meeting or something?
No, it was the No Child Left Behind, the federal government's intrusion into state rights.
Mm-hmm.
That's actually what got me into the political arena, and it's still the issue that we still have today, that there are many departments that we shouldn't even have at the federal level. These should be left up to state rights,
well,
education being one of those.
Absolutely. Now, one of my questions would be to you that here we are in the sequester mode here, and they can't even figure out how to cut just this little bit from the budget. How do you think that you...
I know, $85 billion, and we call it a little bit.
Right, well, it is when you look at the whole budget.
I know. That's kind of sad, honestly. Do you think we're talking about $85 or something?
Well, you know, one of the things that, that was one question. The question is, how can you make it happen? But I was also very interested in your video. You said that we should get rid of the tax code and eliminate the IRS.
Exactly.
How so? Huh?
Would you not agree with that?
Well, I would love to be able to do with that, but then how would you fund for core functions that are part of the government?
Well, there's a lot of questions in there.
Yeah. Well, I mean, go with a national sales tax, or what would be your idea?
My idea is the fair tax.
The fair tax.
The fair tax, yes. It let you know, it gets rid of income tax and capital gains. It becomes a consumption tax, which is collected, you know, at the point of sale.
Right.
And the U.S. Department of Treasury could be the one to reallocate that for the core functions. And,
right.
you know, that's, I think, what we need to talk about is what are the core functions. And as far as I'm concerned, you know, for one, they're listed in the Constitution, but just to make it simple, there are really two things. It is our defense, which is our national defense, not nation building. It's about the defense of our country and infrastructure. So you have commerce so that, you know, we have free trade and free enterprise, which is what it's all supposed to be about. You know, it's not about the government making jobs. It's about citizens having the, you know, free enterprise and the ability to use our money and to create jobs ourselves. And when we are overtaxed and overburdened, and our money is being redistributed where the federal government sees fit and where we, you know, it limits us
as a
citizen.
Right. I couldn't agree with you more. So I guess you're not for President Obama's redistribution of wealth program.
No, I'm not. You know what they say, that, what is it, the definition of a liberal is one that will give away anything that he doesn't own.
Right.
And, you know, and it does create a welfare state, and we have the same problem here in South Carolina. And the way I look at a welfare state is that a welfare state is a police state because you are being dictated to. I mean, even those that are on welfare, I feel that they are victims to a system. When you are encouraged not to work because we will pay you more to stay home than to be industrious, your system is upside down.
I couldn't agree with you more. I've seen it right here in my own business where people have said, yeah, I can stay home and not have to do all this.
Exactly. And, I mean, you have to have incentives. And I think most people like to feel like they're worth something, you know, as a human being, and that they're actually participating in society. There's a great movie, a documentary, which I'm dying to get my hands on. I need to order it because I don't think there's any other way of getting it. It's called Runaway Slave. And it's really done from an African-American point of view, that you're still on the plantation because you're still being told what you can and can't do by the government.
So the government is like this huge plantation.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, exactly. So what? I guess we could say that you are a strict constitutionality person.
You could say that. I am.
You are. And that, but what do you do? How do you feel that people that say that the Constitution should be changing? Because how could somebody write a document over 200 years ago and still be relevant today?
You know, it is about principles and values. It's the foundation. And when you have a solid foundation in constitutional principles, there really is, I mean, it's defined so clearly of what's right and what's wrong. I mean, it's amazing that those men were able to, but they had, you know, thousands of years of history that they had learned from. And
so what's our problem today? Because we've added a little more history.
Well, it is about government employment. I mean, who doesn't want a government job? One of the things that I would love to do is eliminate the double standard that we have in Congress, that we as citizens, you know, we have to take care of our own health insurance and we have to take care of our own retirement. I don't see that those that we elect should be given, you know, the benefits. I think we pay them well enough that they can take care of their own benefits. And I would like to propose that bill. But let's go back to the sequestration. You know, our budget's fairly large, considering. We're the third largest, Charleston County School District's the third largest government employer. Let's just get it right to the point.
Okay.
In Charleston County. We're the second largest school district outside of Greenville. Ahead of us, the first place is defense, and second place is the Medical University of South Carolina. So, I mean, which is really kind of sad when you're saying that those that are the government are the largest employers in a pretty much probably in all districts, actually, if you start looking at it. But we have a budget. Our budget is actually overall with capital, operations, debt, and our building program. We're over $1 billion in our budget.
Just for the Charleston School District?
Yes, just for the Charleston School District.
Wow.
And, you know, we do a budget every year, and our CFO is just dying to raise the millage rate coming up. We're coming up on the budget season again. And I'm like, you can just forget about it, but that's not I will not be voting to do that. But what my point is that every department puts in their wish list of what they want. And then, therefore, that gives you a overall budget. And if it's not within your means, then you're not going to get it, which is the same thing that just happened at the federal level. All agencies put in their wish list of what they wanted in their budget, and basically it's growing what they already have and not living within the revenue that they are given. So it was really a wish list. It was their desire to grow their agencies, not to sustain what they already have. And for me, I've been after Charleston. I have a really hard time on the Charleston County School Board because we do have a lot of liberal-leaning board members. It seems to be that way throughout the state, as probably throughout the country, if I could really make that larger.
on school boards generally, is that what you're saying?
Yes.
With education?
Yes.
What do you think should be the basis of education as far as a point that the states, I'm sure is what you believe, should be responsible, but also how narrow should the field be on schools?
How narrow should the what?
Should the field be on schools? Should it be at the totally at the local level? How do you feel?
Seeing that it is a government agency and I am elected and I understand who I represent, constituents and my taxpayer, not the bureaucracy and the administration, which I have a lot of that are protective of that industry, what I would love to see, and I actually spoke to, what's the chair of the education on the House? I think his name's Owens. We're supposed to have conversations at the state level as well, what we see not working for us at the local level, and to get them to listen to you is utterly impossible. I mean, but I would like to see after Act 388, I agreed with Act 388, but it had an unintended consequence of the burden going only to the 6% property. But what I'm driving at here is Act 388 actually, made a point of sale that all collections went to the state for redistribution. So we would be equitably funding education. That was the whole intent of it. And also to take the burden off of the homeowner because it was pretty burdensome. And every time they needed something, they just increased your taxes and your insurance went up on your house. We have the only oversight local school districts have is school boards. And if you have a school board that is not transparent, not accountable, you need another entity. You need another oversight. You need another reporting agency. And I would like to see us be under the umbrella of the Legislative Audit Council. We are excluded. Local municipalities and school districts are excluded under the LAC because originally our tax base was solely from local taxes. Mm-hmm. But since Act 388, that changed the makeup. I think we need an oversight.
Hmm. Well, I know one of the things that, up in our area, we had the superintendent of schools, Mick Zace, on, and he was talking about the difference in the dollars that are spent on each school. And a school district that had much more money being spent on it was actually doing worse than one that had less money. I mean,
well, it's not about the money, as we well know.
Sure.
That is not the issue. But I can tell you where the root of the issue is. I got elected in 2010. And before I got elected, Charleston County School District, they came up with a great idea, and I'll tell you what it was, that literacy should be a priority.
Okay.
I was like, I know. Who knew? I was like, what a novel idea.
Sure.
That we should teach reading.
Right.
And what we've discovered, or actually I've known this for a long time, I didn't just discover it, but, and that is, and I've even talked to the, what is the group out of Rock Hill, it's the educators. I spoke to them about it as well in when I was running. And the problem that we have is that, you know, higher education is not properly training teachers that are coming out of their institutions. We're having to retrain them or teach them how to teach. And when you have teachers that are coming, you know, you think, oh, they graduated in education and they're 21 and they're going to go teach kindergarten in first grade. Well, that's kind of scary, honestly, if they don't know how to teach reading.
Sure. So how does this all relate to your run for Congress now, Elizabeth?
Well, it has everything to do with we are upset. I mean, a lot, you know, the Tea Party got started in 2009. They were a little late to the table, but fortunately they've come to the table, that we're tired of the federal government intruding on our, you know, we want to limit government. I truly believe in limiting government. And to the only way that you can really limit government is you need to have a voice at the table and work at doing just that.
But haven't we seen how our federal government works? We don't usually have a voice at the table, do you?
We have a voice by our elected officials.
But I'm saying that they have not been invited. The Republicans, for example, have not really been invited to be at the table, and that seems to be the problem.
On the Senate side. Well, you know, the funny thing is I need to read it more thoroughly, but the Simpson Bowles, that was a nonpartisan group put together,
sure.
And Erskine Bowles, I know personally, I know he's a Democrat, but he's also a very fiscal conservative.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to babysit for his children.
Okay.
But there are, you know, there are two sides, and we have to communicate. You know, the Constitution says, it doesn't say must. It says must. It should say shall.
Right.
You know, in legalese, shall is the determining word. Must you can ignore. But it says that in order for, you know, the country as a whole to benefit from Congress, we have to work together, both the House and the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you have to find those that are fiscally conservative on the other side who see, you know, that this is a disaster of what's happening to the American people. They, you know, themselves, they may be profiting off of it. Who knows? But that's where, you know, I'm a fan of term limits, because the problem is that once you are there too long, you lose sight of what really matters.
Sure.
And you end up being bought by special interests. And you end up, you know, you end up benefiting. And I think it's a very corrupt, as we well know, campaign finance. And everyone that is trying to manipulate their side of the story, when it really needs to be, you know, us as a whole.
Absolutely. Now, Elizabeth, we haven't really told our listeners, but you are a business person. Why don't you just go through a little bit about your background?
Okay.
Business person, you've been?
Yes, we've been in business all my life. We started a small business in renovations early, and that's pretty much been the core of our business, has been real estate and construction.
And how do you find business now, Elizabeth?
Well, people are spending a little bit more money.
Okay.
But we also have somewhat of a... an elite market, I guess I could say that. That sounds snobbish, but...
you deal with more of the upper market.
Yeah, we deal with more of an upper, you know, market. We do a lot of, we do custom homes in Kiowa.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of second homes for CEOs. But for 2 years, we had nothing.
Sure.
Nobody was doing anything. In 2008, 2009, it just shut down. There was no, but we that has been the core of our business. In addition to, we have a fishing dock on Shim Creek where the shrimpers are, And I understand, and so talking about the working class, they are the hardest working individuals, and they are really upset about the overregulation.
Sure.
I mean, it's very simple, and it's happening to all of us, not just them, but they are being regulated out of a, you know, their job.
Sure.
We have overregulated the fishing industry on our side, and we have no regulation internationally, which we don't have any rights really to make that much regulation on other countries. But we are letting those, you know, import from foreign countries, and they don't have regulations on their vessels as we put on ours. So we're not competitive because they're not competitive, and they're very upset. And this is because of regulation or over-regulation on their very industries. I mean, and they're very conscientious of the environment because it is their livelihood.
Sure.
So, and I know that I was speaking to them not that long ago, and I've known them for, you know, 15 years. So it's not like I just talk to them because I'm running. Right. I've been talking to them for a long time.
What are you hearing from people that what are their questions, and how do you feel that you are doing in the in this lineup that we have with 16 candidates running?
Well, I'm hoping that women will actually vote for a woman. That's really what I'm hoping for. You know, women are, we've been the, in the Republican Party, we have been the heart of the party, and if it wasn't for the Republican women, there wouldn't be a Republican Party because we're the ones that hold it together. I joined the Republican Party in the early 80s. We had the first convention, never happened since, to elect the President of the United States. And I think that was 84.
Mm-hmm.
And I was actually a delegate at that convention. But, you know, I've been in the grassroots, working diligently, all my life, actually, all my adult life.
Why do you think a woman is better qualified? I know that you said that conservative women have common sense. Why do you think that a woman would actually be better in this position?
Well, if you just look at, you ask any man, if you're not putting him on the spot, who runs the house, and I'm sure he's going to tell you it's not him.
You're probably right, yeah.
You know, women, we multitask and we look at the larger picture, especially when it comes to our families and what needs to happen, and we plan and we organize, and we do all this so that the men can just, you know, focus on one thing. It's amazing. And that we would not, you know, give a woman, we know how qualified women are.
Mm-hmm.
And that we tend to find we get to the root of the problem instead of trying to solve the symptoms. And that's always the true with anything. If you're having symptoms, you can't keep treating the symptoms like education, throw more money at it, because that's not fixing the problem.
How do you think Governor Haley has done as governor?
I think that woman is Teflon.
Okay. Teflon, all right.
She is so tough. And she's had a lot, you know,
she's had a lot of stuff thrown at her.
Yes, she has. Yeah. And I think she's done an excellent job.
Well, you know, I mean, because you talk about a woman running, you know, she certainly had to run hard in the field she was in. Now, how do you feel that in this field of 16, how do you feel? You feel strong about where you're at in this this lineup? I know you've got a debate tonight.
I do. I feel very strong. And I just have to tell you that I am a very firm believer in our Republican principles, which are very rooted in the Constitution. And I don't think, when you really get down to it, anybody can argue, even the Democratic side can argue against the principles of the Constitution. I mean, you know, they're big defenders of it as well. Unfortunately, when you put people on a welfare state, you know, it's sort of like how the Democrats have stayed in office is, actually, it hasn't necessarily been so much the welfare as it has been unions that have gotten out the vote to maintain their benefits, which
now,
is
when you talk
scary.
About getting, when you talk about getting out to vote, the Hispanic vote was very strong on the, really on the Democratic side. How do you think the Republican Party needs to change in order to be inclusive to all people?
I think we need to quit social engineering. That is not the position of the government, to, you know, social engineer
us. What do you mean by that, Elizabeth?
There are many things that they tend to get involved with that really are at the personal level. And I think in the last presidential race, we have to be more humane. I think immigration, I know that for the Latinos, that group, it is a very touchy issue. And if there is no room to talk, you know, come to the table and discuss the pros and cons of the policies that we presently have and how they are or are not working or what's not getting enforced, we need to open up dialogue.
And what about the state of South Carolina and immigration? Where do you stand on that one?
Well, I do believe that our laws should be enforced. And we do know that there's 11 million illegal immigrants here. My husband's decided he has the cure-all. He says, you know, if they want to come and they want to work, what you do is you make them pay $3,000. You give them an identification so that they can be taxed, and that way you can track them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you have this many illegals, it's because the system has made it utterly impossible for anybody who would like to come legally to come. I mean, I think it goes back to the root of the problem. I think we need to go back to our immigration policy and really analyze it and open up the dialogue to see what it is that is promoting this kind of behavior.
Do you think that those that are already here should be deported, or should they be able to apply and stay here?
You know, the sentiments that I get from my sister-in-law is Chinese, and her family were actually recruited here when she was small, but because her dad was a engineer.
Mm-hmm.
And she is and I know others that have come legally are very adamant, and they're very possessive of the fact that, you know, there has to be a process and it needs to be followed. And they do feel very strongly in that regard. On the other hand, people are sick and tired of the welfare state and people getting to take advantage of things that we have to offer that do not participate in the funding. That's really, I think, the bottom line for a lot of people is they're not paying, but they're taking advantage of our system. And how do you correct that?
Sure.
Now, I don't believe in amnesty.
Okay.
But we also have a larger, you know, illegal immigrants. I mean, for one, you definitely don't want, and I know that even locally there have been issues and actually no enforcement of where there's been crime. Crime on citizens by illegal immigrants. And law enforcement tends to turn a blind eye, and that's scary.
Well, I'm not sure. I'm about the crime, but I do know that it is a difficult thing for local authorities to pick up illegals, people, and then they call the feds, and the feds don't have any interest in coming and picking up or taking the next step. So I do think it is a subject that has to be discussed and has to be resolved.
I agree.
Absolutely.
It does. Our high school here, which, by the way, is now the largest high school in South Carolina.
What's the name of it?
Wando.
Wando, okay.
Mm-hmm. We're over 3,700 students now. Anyway, I think that's just way too big for a high school, but regardless, that's another issue. my point literally that I was getting around to is they put out a newspaper,
mm-hmm.
and they did have a very interesting story in it, and it was about immigration recently, and it kind of drove it home, and it was sad, and it was disheartening at the same time, but when you don't follow the rules, there are consequences, and so it was written from a student's perspective because her mother ended up marrying a illegal immigrant.
Mm-hmm.
And they built a successful business, a small business, and it was growing. They had a, you know, they had a family together. And he got caught, I think, doing 45 in a 35-mile zone, and he got deported.
Wow.
And the breakup of that family and, the consequences thereof, it's, you know, from a humanitarian standpoint, it does, hurts to see that here you have, somebody that they were being successful. They were actually, not on welfare.
Paying taxes, I presume.
Paying taxes.
Sure.
Had a small thriving business and a family, and they've just totally been ripped apart. The mother left her older daughter here because she wanted to finish, her high school. She's still in high school. And she went to Mexico, but with her younger children, she said the education system was just not up to snuff, and so she went back to Florida for whatever reason. But because of the strain on that relationship, that whole relationship is over. That whole family just got broke up, and it is disheartening.
But we have lots of cases.
But at the same time, the man did come illegally.
Mm-hmm.
So there are a lot of issues there. And they affect people.
So I guess the question is, how do you make a hard and fast policy straight down, this is what we're going to do?
Well, I'd be interested to hear your suggestions.
I don't have one.
Oh, darn.
But I'm just saying, how do we come to conclusions when there are...
I think it's sitting down, literally, and focusing on what we have on the table and what is not working and how to correct, instead of going back to, trying to take care of symptoms to solve the problem.
Exactly.
And I think we need to get to the root of the problem. And, enforcement, if that is not working, why is it not working? And or is it such that it's not even user-friendly? Because sometimes, you need something that's user-friendly.
Sure.
Which then, instead of, because I say this a lot, and it's unfortunate, because we tend to take punitive action instead of corrective action. And I prefer corrective action. To correct, what is not working.
All right. So, this is coming up, March 19th. Why should people, we're not voting for you up here, Elizabeth, but we are interested because it does affect our state.
I'm sure you have those that live in Greenwood also have relatives and friends that live in the 1st Congressional.
So what I wanted to ask you is, why should people vote for you?
Because I am for the people. I have proven it. I have all my life, I have served my community and the general population, and I understand that, public service requires private sacrifice, and it's something that I've always done and I've always been driven to do, and I know who I work for, and I work for those that elect me. I don't have any special interests except for my constituents. That I will still be the same person that I am today when I get elected to Congress. And that is something that most people don't really understand, is that it is true, until you elect somebody, you don't necessarily know if they're going to be the same person once they get elected. And I have watched this happen, even at the local level, that the person that you elect becomes a different person after they get elected. Something happens to these individuals that's somewhat disheartening. I actually worked very hard to get a Tea Party member elected to the school board, and he will go to a meeting and he'll say, I'm adamantly against this and I'm not going to vote for it. And we go to call the vote and he votes with it. And I'm like, excuse me, why? And I'll be the lone no vote. I'm like, why would you do that? You told me you were adamantly against it. Well, we didn't have the majority. Well, I'm sorry, but, that is not the... It takes people a while to realize, I think, sometimes what their position really is. They don't understand it. But since the day I got elected, I've not been. I was no different before I was elected than after I got elected. I firmly believe in my principles and my values, which are totally the constitutional values, and I won't waver from them.
Well, I tell you what, I know that, do you think there's going to be a runoff, Elizabeth, with 16 candidates in the Republican? Do you think there'll be a runoff?
Well, seeing that women make up 51% of the vote, I'm hoping that they'll just take me over the mark.
Okay, well, you better get out there and shake a lot of hands, honey. Have a lot of tea parties or something down there.
Exactly. It's interesting. It's going to be an interesting race, and we're all very much looking forward to March 19th.
Absolutely. Well, listen,
but it's been fun, and it's been a good group, and I've enjoyed getting to know them. And regardless of what happens, there's been some great contacts that we have made.
Absolutely.
So,
well, you know, you're going to be on. We'll be able to watch the debate down there in Charleston. It starts at 6:30, and it's going to be on the stream. Ashley Byrd from South Carolina Radio News Network is one of the questioners, as well as Curtis Loftus. Should be an interesting night.
It should be, and I'm looking forward to it. I love Curtis. He's a fighter.
He is a fighter, and I'm sure it'll be very interesting. He seems to come up with some interesting questions sometimes, doesn't he, and issues.
And he's been fighting them himself firsthand.
He absolutely has. All right, that's going to do it for us. Listen, Elizabeth, I wish you all the best, and I certainly appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to give us a call.
Well, I enjoy talking to you, Ann, always, even if I'm not running.
Well, okay. Well, we'll have to have you back on. Thanks so much, Elizabeth. Good luck.
Okay. Thank
Bye-bye.
You.